Good afternoon. The time is 2 o'clock. Welcome to Vox Pop for this Wednesday, September 20th. I'm Ray Graff. Well, the excitement has been building all day long here. The electricity is in the air. You feel a certain buzz. It's all because Rich Guthrie is back here in the studio. Rich is the Birdman of Capital Land. He's here to answer your questions about all your avian friends. And the number to call is 800-348-2551. People are calling already. They're emailing. There is such a buzz in the studio because Rich Guthrie is here once again to answer your bird questions. 800-348-2551. You may also email the program voxpop@wamc.org. But again, the number 800-348-2551. Get a cool drink. Sit quietly. Try to stay calm. Rich is in the house. We begin after the news. Hello once again. Welcome back to Vox Pop, WAMC's live afternoon call-in talk show. I'm Ray Graff. We're discussing birds today on the program, and we bring back our expert, Rich Guthrie, to answer your questions. I have a feeling this will be just a historic hour of radio. Rich is retired from the New York State Department of Environmental Conservation. He's a board member of the State Ornithological Association and the regional reviewer for the premium birding site, eBird. Our number is 800. What are you looking at, Rich?
It's all historic. We got it. It already is.
The number to call is 800-348-2. I'm trying to play this straight here. The number to call is 800-348-2551. History-making broadcasting coming up. 800-348-2551. You can also email the program, voxpop@wamc.org. And again, the number is 800-348-2551. How you doing, Rich?
We're good.
This is a big buildup for this program.
Yeah, I know. We're ready.
One of the great moments in radio history coming up.
Roll them.
Oh, I got nothing. Oh, well, let's do an email. Now, hang on here. Before we get to the phones, this one came from Michelle very early, 20 minutes before the program.
Holy cow.
I'm curious about how birds breathe and how they accommodate breathing when pollen is high in the spring, especially since they are usually flying around so much and singing. And that's from Michelle in Shandaken. How do they breathe, Rich?
Well, I don't see where there's a issue with the birds breathing. They just, inhale, exhale, flap, flap, flap. It's they don't have the same reaction to pollen as we do. I've never seen a bird sneeze. I've seen a few with runny noses, but that'd be something else.
Yeah. All right. So they're okay.
I believe so.
All right. And then this one is from Joanne in Ballston Spa, and then we'll get to the phones. Could it be possible that the hummingbirds coming each year to my feeders are the same ones from previous years? It has happened that before I have the feeders out each May, they come to the area where I hang the feeders and buzz around like saying, hey, I'm back. Where's the feeder?
Hey, that's very true.
Really?
It really is. Amazing, amazing, amazing. That these tiny little birds can migrate to Mexico. Most of them go to Mexico, all the way down to Costa Rica, Panama, or perhaps the Cuban Islands or the Caribbean Islands, and then all the way back again.
And then right to Joanne's
right
backyard.
Right to the same backyard.
Amazing.
Incredible navigation skills.
And then she has another question. Is it true that birds migrate at night in the dark to fly south? I did not realize that birds could see in the dark to fly.
And that's they do. Yeah. And they can see to a limited extent. Not the same skills that they have during the daylight hours, but they use nighttime, presumably for a couple of reasons, to take full advantage of the long day following so that they can rest up, feed on daytime insects and the like. And also the air is said to be calmer at night, especially at the altitude that the birds are flying. There's not so much turbulence caused by the wind and the sun warming the earth currents type of thing.
Yeah.
So they can make tracks. Then they'll spend a few days resting in a favorable spot. And given a good northwest wind or northerly wind, off they go the next week or so gone.
Well, Rich Guthrie is our guest today on this history-making broadcast, and our number is 800-348-2551. Let's go to Theo in Niskayuna. Theo, you're on.
Yes. I just was wondering, we feed the birds in the summertime all the time and put the large feeder out. And about every 2 days, the birds can seem to consume it all. And I noticed about 10 days ago, there are no more birds. And the cardinals, which we have all winter, and the robins and the goldfinches and blue. Why have they all disappeared so early?
Well, there's a couple of possibilities. Not everybody feeds birds all through the summer, and some of your neighbors may just have put out their bird feeders, and you now have some competition. Birds are maybe going to bird feeders down the road with a different mix of variety, or there's an abundance of food out there. The berries are ripe, the insects are plentiful, and the seeds are abundant. So
it's not that uncommon of an occurrence.
No. They'll be back. Don't worry. When the weather starts turning and they start using up all the resources around. And then also some of the birds have already left. You know, they've gone south. So, you know, there'll be a number of possibilities. But I wouldn't worry about it.
Okay.
Keep the feeders going and good luck.
Theo, thank you very much for the call. And you said before the program that this is getting to be a busy time for birds.
This is the peak.
Really?
They're all, this is, if you look at bird migration as a curve, as a sine curve, this is, we're right up the top, the crest of the wave.
Why is that?
Oh, favorable time. The young are out of the nest, the food is abundant, they have plenty of chance to fatten up and head south before the cold, nasty weather starts settling in. And some of the birds are long gone. You know, so the orioles, the orchard oriole, or, you know, tanagers, and many of the male hummingbirds, they're out of town already.
It's funny, a couple of months ago, I had explained that we had a bird nest underneath our overhang on our back porch, and you ID'd the bird, and you were absolutely right. I forget what it was, but they left. They had their babies, and they've been gone for a month, over a month.
It's like there's no home hanging around for them. It's the job done, out of here.
Yep.
And they may not have gone far. The flycatchers or the warblers or the sparrows may have just gone down to the meadow at the bottom, down the road.
You had ID'd it, and I can't remember the name. It had a pretty name.
Like a Phoebe?
That was it.
Aha.
Yeah, that's the one.
They're usually porch nesters. And
but they leave quickly.
They not far.
Yeah.
They're around. There's still Phoebes hanging around, but they're not where you used to see them.
All right, let's go over to Marianne in West Hurley. Where, Marianne, you're on.
Hi. I had a few hummingbird questions for you. Thank you for taking the call.
Sure.
Do you have any ideas how to keep hornets away from the hummingbird feeders?
Not really. The hornets, the yellow jackets are, and also some of the other bees, but especially the yellow jackets, they are drawn to the sugar substance.
They like the sweet.
They like the sweetness, and all I can say is good luck. The hummingbirds can more or less fend for themselves. They're a little bit annoyed, intimidated, but they deal with them all the time, even around the flowers and the like, the bumblebees and the hornets and the like. So all I would say is be careful. Hornets are no friend of mine.
Absolutely. And so the hornets will not sting the hummingbirds?
Not likely. No, they'll just annoy them. They're, when it comes to that, the hummingbird is not a threat to the hornet, and they certainly will not attack a hornet. They may try to counter with a little intimidation or the like, but for the most part, they try to keep their ways apart.
All right, Marianne, thank you for the call. Our number is 800-348-2551, and our guest is none other than Rich Guthrie. And we go over to John in Florence, Massachusetts. John, you're on.
Hi. My question has to do with nighthawks. There were years going past where regularly on late summer evenings, I would go out and see nighthawks flying around in large bunches. And then some years, not at all. Last year, I saw some again. But I'm just wondering if there's any way of knowing when and where they're going to appear and sort of figuring that out. It's really delightful to see them.
Well, it certainly is, and I agree with you on that. Years ago, we used to be able to go out and enjoy an evening with nighthawks flying around, and not only in the countryside, but also in the cities, downtown Pittsfield or Albany or Schenectady. You could see nighthawks in the evening foraging around in the air. Unfortunately, something has happened to the nighthawk population. They've taken a deep plunge in numbers and disappeared primarily from the area. But there's still a few that migrate through this time of year. Most of them have gone south already, but they're favorable places where you might still see them. They have traditional roosting spots where the same, let's say, extended family or group will come and return to a familiar, a favored roosting spot, different generations over time, but nonetheless, they keep coming back. And I can think of one in the Albany area is the Albany pine bush. And over in the Lenox area, down there by Tanglewood, there's a roosting spot. So they may all have left town by now, but those are...
Yeah, no, I was thinking more of late August, but I used to work in Westfield, Mass, and so I would come out of work, and there'd be lights in the parking lot, and you'd just see the birds flying around for a couple of days in a row, and then... I just haven't seen it so much anymore.
Well, because the numbers just aren't the same anymore.
Yeah.
But there are still a few places where you can go and see a dozen or 20. And you're right about that. August is the peak, the prime time for them. Right into about now. And then the last of them may still be lingering and late tardy migrants.
John, thank you for the call. Now, you say the numbers are down. Does that mean the numbers down everywhere or just in this neck of the woods?
Throughout the Northeast, for the most part. If you go out to the Midwest or far west up into the prairie states, Nighthawk numbers seem to be doing okay up and through Canada.
Okay.
And that may be where some of these migrants that we're still seeing are coming from.
Our number here is 800-348-2551, 800-348-2551. Rich Guthrie is here. We'll be back.
Support for WAMC comes from Interim Healthcare for 46 years, offering in-home assisted living for individuals, companions, aides, and nurses, serving the Greater Capital Region, Columbia and Saratoga counties, as well as Glens Falls. InterimHealthcare.com. The Lake George Land Conservancy, Bolton Landing, New York, protecting the land that protects the lake, offering more than 32 miles of trails for hiking, birding, and outdoor exploration. HikeLakeGeorge.org. The 1850 House Inn and Tavern, now taking reservations for romantic getaway packages and special events. Heated deck for waterfront dining. The1850House.com. Lakeview Orchard and Farm Stand, 94 Old Cheshire Road, Lanesboro, Massachusetts. Apples, peaches, pumpkins, winter squash, apple cider, pies, pastries, kapusta, gulumpki, and pierogies. LakeviewOrchard.com. And from Rolling Rock Farm Salt and Seasoning, Sheffield, Massachusetts. Now crafting black garlic and black garlic products in small batches. BlackGarlicSeaSalt.com for more information.
Oh, yeah, that's Junior Brown. The man can play the guitar, eh, Rich?
Mm-hmm.
He's pretty good. Our number here is 800-348-2551. It's Vox Pop. Rich Guthrie, our bird expert, is here. And, Rich, so many things happening.
So many things.
You have 12 seconds to list them all.
Okay.
No, no, no,
good
no.
Moving
take,
right
take
along
your time,
here.
Take your time.
Here we go. First of all, on September 30th, I'll be doing a hawk walk at Thatcher State Park.
Now, hawks traditionally fly, right?
Hawks fly. We walk.
I see.
And we talk.
Okay.
And that'll be at 11 o'clock at Thatcher State Park, just west of Albany, New York, in the Helderberg Mountains. That's an all-day affair, but with many, many different activities. Check with Thatcher State Park online for their activities. And 11 o'clock at the new visitor center, we
all
start
right.
our little hawk walk. The Hudson a lot of clubs are getting reactive again this time of year, and the Hudson Mohawk Bird Club will be doing a walk to Vicious Ferry Nature and Historic Preserve. That's at 8 o'clock on September 23rd.
In the morning or in the evening?
In the morning.
Okay.
Saratoga National Historic Park, 9 o'clock, September 24th. And Woodland Preserve, that's in Schenectady County at 8 a.m. at October 1st. And that Hudson Mohawk Bird Club, hmbc.net, for those details.
All right.
The Hoffman Bird Club in Williamstown, Massachusetts, will be doing a linear park at 7:30 in the morning on September 24th. HoffmanBirdClub.org. And then, a little down the road, I'll be doing a program on Cuba for the Hoffman Bird Club in Pittsfield. That's November 6th at 7 in the evening. That'll be at the Guardian Life Insurance Building in Pittsfield, Massachusetts.
Oh, nice.
7 o'clock in the evening
okay.
on November 6th. Down in Orange County, New York, the Mearns Bird Club, M-E-A-R-N-S, birdclub.org, will be doing a field trip on September 23rd to the Bashakill. And then on September 27th, to Stewart State Forest.
Wow.
That's at MearnsBirdClub.org.
All right.
At the Alan DeVoe Bird Club over in Columbia County, New York, on October 7th, we'll be visiting Stockport Station at 8 a.m. Alan DeVoe Bird Club.org. One more, we have the Southern Adirondack Audubon Society. We'll be going to Hudson Crossing Park on Tuesday, September 26th at 8 in the morning. That's in Schuylerville, Saratoga County. Southern Adirondack Audubon.org. And Bedford Audubon is doing a Maple Avenue walk in Katona, New York, September 21st at 7:30 in the morning. That's BedfordAudubon.org. And then they also have, and this is especially good, the Chestnut Ridge Hawk Watch in Bedford Hills, New York. And that's a daily event depending on the weather. Check with BedfordAudubon.org for details. The Hawk Watch right now is really spectacular with the Broadwing Hawks nearing their peak in migration, where you can see hundreds, if not a thousand, plus other kinds of hawks overhead.
Is that the end of the list?
That's it. We're good.
All right. That's all the time we have for on Vox Pop. Thanks, everyone, for listening. No, I'm kidding. Rich,
we're good.
All right. That was a long list, Rich. All right. You know, let's go back to the phones in just a moment. But first, a couple of emails that have come in while you're reciting the list. This one's from Gina. Who are the earliest birds that wake us up in the morning?
It depends on where you are and who they are. Usually it's the robin.
She's in Westchester.
The robin, the early bird. But other ones, some of them will sing right through the night, such as the mockingbird on a good full moon night during the summer. They'll sing right through the night. And a whippoorwill will sing through the night as well.
All right, this one's from Tony. I noticed a bird sitting on the outside banister of a stairway at a friend's house in the Catskills in the summer of 2016. I thought it odd where it was perched, but then below it, a chipmunk came out of a hole directly underneath, and the bird dive-bombed it. I looked up the bird online, and it is apparently a junco. I noticed the exact same activity this year. They almost seem to be playing with each other. What's all that about?
They're not playing. No, this is serious business. Chipmunks, being cute little critters that
delicious.
They are, will help themselves to the babies of lots of different birds. And that junco was taking proactive measures to protect its babies.
Ah,
so
okay.
it had an eye on that chipmunk to make sure that it kept its distance away from the nest.
So there was no, the junco wasn't going to pick up the chipmunk and bring it back to the nest for a snack.
No, okay. A little bit out of their league.
Fair enough. This one's from Jules. My wife saw a couple of what appeared to be winter wrens in our front yard in North Hillsdale yesterday.
Yesterday, winter wrens could be.
Okay.
Yeah. Winter wrens, despite the name, are actually summer wrens up north and winter wrens down south. In our area, they're transients. And now's a time when they could be hopping and flopping through their neighborhood.
Okay. So not out of the question.
Nope.
Let's go over to Bill in Albany. Bill, you're on.
Yes. Good afternoon. I feed the birds once a day, spring, summer, fall. In winter, I feed them twice a day because food is scarcer. And I usually feed them during the three seasons, in late afternoon. In the wintertime, twice a day, morning and late afternoon. Okay?
Mm-hmm.
I have a bird bath, a bird house, and a bird feeder on the north side of my yard. On the south side of my yard, I have a neighbor. And recently, she told my wife that she wants me to stop feeding the birds. Nonetheless, I'm feeding them anyways.
Mm-hmm.
Anyhow, she got two metal owls and a pole and a string, and it's in her yard, and it overlooks my fence, which is fine. And recently, she now has an audio recording of, I believe, predatory birds that plays every 20 minutes. She wants to keep the birds out of the yard. But the birds don't go into her yard because she's not feeding them. A bird nested in her house vent, and she kind of implied it's my fault. There's birds on the other side of her house who hang out, so to speak, in a bush. I'm sure she implies that it's my fault. And she also says that, can I say bird poop, Ray?
Well, you just did.
There's bird poop on her house, and it's my fault.
I see. All right.
Well, I don't agree with her. I'm on your side.
Yeah.
Now, and I also called Albany Animal Control, and he said, I'm not doing anything wrong, and she's not doing anything wrong,
okay.
Which is fine.
Okay.
You know,
yeah,
otherwise
exactly.
We get along.
Yeah,
right.
That's too bad.
Well, that is a shame.
You know, I really feel sorry for you with regard to your neighbor and her bad backyard behavior, but there's her yard, As long as he's not violating any codes, such as noise ordinances or the like, then I
not much you can do. Not much you can do.
Keep feeding the birds, though, you know?
That's what I'm going to do. Keep feeding the birds.
Attaboy. We love you.
Bill, and maybe we'll see you on the People's Court at some point.
Let's go.
Let's go to Mary in Worthington, Massachusetts. Mary, you're on.
Hi. Thank you. I have two questions. One is, a previous show I heard Rich talking about something you could put on your windows to keep the birds from flying into them.
Yes, and I think he did his homework this time, Mary.
Got it. We're ready.
I'm ready.
Okay, two things on the market that's out there, and I checked them out up at the Adirondack
Bird Fair
Interpretive Center in Newcomb, New York.
Okay.
And we're good to go. One is called Window Alert. Window Alert, A-L-E-R-T. I spell that right? Yeah.
Close enough.
And then the other one is UV liquid, ultraviolet liquid, UV liquid.
Liquid?
Liquid.
How do you put a liquid
spray
on?
Oh,
spray on.
Yeah, in a little container, little aerosol container.
Right on the window.
Right on a window. Now, both of these things create an image that birds can see and we cannot.
Interesting.
Yeah, so so far, this is still product in development, as far as I'm concerned, but the folks up there at the Adirondack Interpretive Center say that it's working. They've been using it for some time now and working according to the recommended application.
So what is the stuff?
It's actually a reflective ingredient that you put on a glass. It's at a higher wavelength than we can see.
Right.
The birds can see it, though, and they avoid the window because it looks to them like dense foliage and spider webs and things.
No, I get it, but what is the actual fluid? Is it safe and effective?
Oh, yeah. Okay. I mean, it goes on the glass, you know, in a prescribed formula.
Okay.
And it comes off easily enough when you need to take it off. And
okay.
You need to occasionally replenish it, although up there they said they've had it on for a couple of seasons and they haven't had to replenish it, and the bird strike kills have dropped dramatically.
Well, that's great. Mary, you had a second question?
Yes. Hummingbirds like the hollyhocks,
mm-hmm.
and so do the Japanese beetles, and they strip the hollyhocks faster than I can squish them.
Oh.
So I'm wondering if you know of an insecticide that would not harm the birds.
Well, there are other things that could work. For one thing, house sparrows, as much as we may like or dislike the house sparrow, they love Japanese beetles.
Really?
And, yeah, they're a good, effective, natural control. And the other thing, there are these pheromone attractants that will capture and bag the Japanese beetle. Draw them in, and you get a bag full of Japanese beetles.
What do you do with the bag?
You throw it out.
Oh, no.
What are you going to do with them?
I don't know.
But they go away, and it's an effective way of dealing, from what I hear. So good luck with that. The house sparrow, to me, is a valuable ally in that little
squirmish.
Where
can you buy a house sparrow?
You can't. You can attract them with bird seed, and also.
What bird seed would attract the house sparrow?
You know, bread works.
Really?
Bread works. You know, bread crumbs or bread scraps, and also cracked corn and millet and the like. You know, the house sparrows are pretty wide open when it comes to diet.
All right, Mary, thank you for that, and we appreciate the call. 800-348-2551, the number, as Rich Guthrie is here on this historic broadcast. Elaine in Delmar. Elaine, you're on.
Hi. I have a bird identification question, and I appreciate the opportunity to ask it.
Okay.
On June 16th, I was in a cab on the way to the airport on I-90 heading west toward the Northway, and there were two red birds in the road eating something right on the highway. The traffic wasn't too heavy, but they weren't cardinals. They had more of a, I don't know birds that well, but I think more of a sparrow shape.
Mm-hmm.
And all of us in the cab agreed that they were not cardinals. They were not the same shape. They didn't have the tufted head. So do you know what they could have been?
Well, what comes to mind, reddish birds in June, I'm going to suggest that they might have been house finches.
Hmm.
They look like sparrows, and the males have a splash of red on them. And they're apt to feed on the ground. I hope they got out of the way of the traffic in time.
But this was more than a splash of red, though, right, Elaine?
Yeah, these were pretty, I believe, you know, it happened very quickly. So my first impression and everyone else's impression was that they were all redbirds like a cardinal would be.
Okay.
But we didn't get to see the underside or anything.
Well, that's all right.
More
red than a, that's more red than a house finch would have. Then the other possibility is a scarlet tanager in June.
That's what my husband thought, yeah.
They really rarely would ever come down to the ground. All I can think of is that perhaps there was some sort of a caterpillar crawling along the highway, and that both of them saw it at the same time. And were down there trying to grab it. Now, aside from that, all red bird in June.
Yeah.
And not a cardinal, not a house finch.
I've been through all my books. I was on the internet for a while, and then I kind of gave up. And then when I heard you were on today, I've been hanging on to ask you.
Well, good. I'm glad you did. Now, a real rare possibility. Now, we're talking outside the box here.
Okay.
And that's the summer tanager, which is all red, does not have the black that the scarlet tanager has. And, in fact, they call it the summer red bird, but it's really a southern bird. You have to be down in Cape May, New Jersey, to really find them in the, at the northern.
Have they ever been spotted up this way?
They have. You know, birds, I've seen them in Greene County, New York, and I know they've been in Albany County in a historic past. So
it could be.
It could.
Oh,
not
wow.
Likely. Yeah.
So look up the summer tanager.
Yeah. Check out summer tanager.
I will.
And
so that would be something that would feed on what would be in the roadway?
No, not likely. Same as the scarlet tanager. But, you know, opportunity knocks, and both of them, highly unlikely that there would be two of them the same time, same place.
I'll be darned.
But,
well, unfortunately, one of them didn't make it. I don't know about the other one. It all happened very quickly by the time we saw it. And
that ain't good.
The cab driver he was so upset. It was very upsetting for all of us, but it happened.
Well, I'm sorry to hear that.
Yeah, well, Elaine, thanks a lot, and let us know on a future program if that is indeed correct. And we go now to Cynthia in Plattekill. Cynthia, you're on.
Hi, thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
You may have answered my question about blue jays just in your other answers. Mid-spring, whenever they're having their babies and they fledge and they're all running around the yard screaming for food, I had a nice family of blue jays, and they lasted about 2 weeks, maybe three tops. And now I haven't had blue jays. They seem like they went somewhere. And I'm feeding suet, and I have one feeder of seed that I started about mid-August to catch some migration. But they don't seem to be around. Is it just because they went down the road?
Yep, same thing. Same thing happened in my yard as well. Blue jays actually nested on my porch and produced a happy family of baby blue jays. And I'll be hard-pressed if I'll see any of them these days. But they'll be back. Crack corn, that's the magnet.
Okay.
That's the magnet. I miss them. They're so much fun.
Well, they are. Bold and brazen and beautiful.
Yeah, thank you very much, Cynthia. They're a little rough, too, aren't they, the Blue Jays?
Oh, yeah. They got an attitude, yeah.
All right, let's go quickly to Bonnie in West Milford, New Jersey. Bonnie, you're on.
Hi, thank you so much for taking my call.
Sure.
I have a quick question about what we call zombie cardinals.
Zombie cardinals.
Zombie cardinals. We regularly feed the birds off of our back deck, and we have two families of cardinals, both of which have raised babies this year. It's been great to watch them bring their babies down to the deck and eat seed off the railing. You know, they flutter their wings and cry, feed me, feed me. It's really great. But the one family, the feathers just look so much less than they should be. And it seems like the red, for instance, of the males, especially on the head and on the body, they're either molting or they're turning black or something. I read a couple of articles, and everybody had different opinions on what was going on. One was that it was either a bug of some sort, and the other was that they were just molting. But it seemed odd that the one pair was wonderful looking, and the other pair just was so featherless.
Just all in the timing. They all go through the same process, and that is shedding their feathers and regrowing them.
They don't do it at the same time?
No. There's the individual variations. Some of them sooner than others, and others. So I wouldn't be concerned. It's a natural thing. It happens with cardinals every year, all the time. Cardinals seem to stand out more than other birds, but every bird goes through the same process. They replace their feathers and grow in fresh new ones, and all ready for the oncoming winter or migration or both.
And do different birds molt at different times of year?
Sure do. Most of them right after the nesting season.
That's
right.
Okay.
They nest in June and July, and they're molting in August and September. Some of them, it may be an individual delay in their molt process. If they have a later brood, then they may postpone molting until a later time in the year. But at some time or another, each one of them, the young ones don't go through that same molt as the adults because they just grew a whole bunch of new feathers. No need to replace them in August. But the adults have to go through that every year.
Bonnie, thank you for the call. So why the mechanism of molting? What is the evolutionary reason for that?
Feathers wear out.
They really wear out?
Oh, sure. They get frayed. They get broken. They get missing. And this way they have a chance to regenerate a whole fresh new wardrobe, and off they go.
And while they molt, they're still able to fly?
Some of them, yeah, they are. They molt in such a sequence that they retain their flight feathers. So there's actually an interesting sequence of replacement where the flight feathers start to drop off and reemerge. And by the time they get to each of them, there's another set of feathers that will serve the function. But in the meantime, you know, it ain't fun. I mean, it takes up a lot of energy. It's not comfortable. It's probably itchy and achy. And birds tend to lay low at this time of year. Now, waterfowl drop their flight feathers all at once. I don't know why they decide to do this, but they do. Then they cannot fly.
They have to stay in the water.
They have to stay out of sight.
Oh,
yeah.
Be darned. Rich Guthrie is our guest. We'll take a quick break. 800-348-2551. It's Birds Today, and we'll be back with a home stretch.
Support for WAMC comes from Claire Pearson, Shelburne Falls, Massachusetts. For 14 years, offering plant spirit medicine and energy clearing for health, body, mind, and spirit. ClarePearson.net. The Hyde Collection, an art museum and historic house in Glens Falls, New York. Open Tuesday through Saturday, 10 to 5, and Sundays, 12 to 5. HydeCollection.org for more information. Capital Roots, working to make fresh, healthy, and local food accessible to Capital Region neighborhoods and striving to make fresh, affordable food a right, not a privilege. CapitalRoots.org for information on how to support. Love Apple Farms, Route 9H, Ghent, New York. Authentic Mexican lunch, you pick fruit, petting zoo, fresh market, cider donuts, and bakery. Now open, Love Apple Art Space, 518-828-5048. And from Careers in Transition, LLC, Albany, Dr. Tom Denham, providing individual career guidance, career testing, job strategies, interview preparation, LinkedIn lessons, resume and cover letter writing, careersintransitionllc.com.
It's Vox Pop on WAMC. Ray Graff here with our buddy Rich Guthrie, and we do a bird program, and we'll get back to the phones in a minute. A couple of quick emails here, Rich. And this one's from Emily. Hello, Richard Ray, historic broadcasters. To the caller with a Japanese beetle problem, she might want to go to a good gardening center and ask about milky spore or investigate it on the internet. It's a non-toxic specific control for Japanese beetles that you apply to your lawn and open sections of your garden. It sometimes takes a couple of years to be totally effective, but I've used it and it has helped greatly reduce the number of Japanese beetles chewing on my flower garden.
I like the idea.
Very nice. And then this one is from Mary. Is it true praying mantis prey on hummingbirds, and should we remove them if we see them on feeders?
No. Yes. No.
What?
Yeah.
What?
They do. They do. Actually do.
Praying mantises prey on hummingbirds.
Yeah, it's a terrible thing. Terrible.
However, not that big.
I know.
How can you pull down a hummingbird?
They do. They're very, you know.
That I got to see.
Well, I don't want to see it.
All right, fine.
I've never seen it. I've seen photographs of it. It ain't pretty.
Really?
Yeah. But it is so rare. So rare. And praying mantises are so good.
They're also protected, by the way.
No, they're not.
They're not?
No. That was an old story.
That's true. You can.
As kids, we used to hear that all the time. $25 fine and all that
stuff. It's not true?
Not true at all.
Well, you looked it up?
But it's...
What, are you killing praying mantises?
No, I wouldn't dare. But,
all right.
But I check it out. You
all
know,
right,
we want to
be
sure we got it. And it's just one of those scare things. It's, you know, like don't bring the baby bird home because it's a story.
Yeah.
Same thing. So, but which is is good for praying mantises. You don't want little kids beating up on them.
Right.
Agreed. So, and we like our praying mantises. Keep them happy, keep them healthy, and don't worry about the hummingbirds at the feeder. That's, it is so rare that I wouldn't be concerned. And hummingbirds have enough to deal with, and they need all the help they can get.
But can you just gently move the praying mantis over, you know, to the next block?
You could, but the chances are its encounter with a hummingbird will be few and far between. I'd be more concerned about the outdoor cat than I would be the praying mantises. Now, they are devastating when it comes to hummingbirds.
Has a praying mantis been known to prey on an outside cat?
I hope so, but no.
You know, you don't like cats. I have a problem with that.
Good reasons.
All right, let's agree to disagree. Let's go to Donna in Woodridge. Donna, you're on.
Hi, just a follow-up call in regards to the woman whose birds have disappeared in her backyard. I'm in the Hudson Valley. We feed all the birds all the time. We are usually the loudest, busiest feeders in the area. And all of a sudden, our birds have also disappeared. And on our local Audubon site, a lot of other people are complaining about this as well. And thank you for taking my call.
Oh, you're welcome. And
Donna.
Again, it's just a cyclical event. And it's not boding ill for anything more sinister than that.
Okay.
I would not be overly concerned. Now, we'll keep an eye out and see that it isn't something of a long-term trend, but I wouldn't. I don't think so now. I think it's just a seasonal event.
And in theory, you'd be able to check these long-term trends at eBird, right?
On eBird, yes, indeed, which I'll be glad. I do the review for eBird, which is a Cornell University website, interactive website. I encourage all
so you
to not only contribute, but also to harvest the resource of eBird.org.
And you keep out the fake. So if I say I saw an ostrich up in Clifton Park, you would be quick to put that.
I would know what to do with it right away.
All right, I'll check that
out. Usually it means I would contact you and say, are you sure about that? And I get answers of various sorts.
Let's go over to Jim, our buddy Jim in North Pownall, Vermont. You're on.
Hey, great show as always.
Thank you.
Thank you guys. Thank you. Fantastic stuff. I was going to recommend milky spore bacteria for Japanese beetle control, but somebody beat me to it.
Oh, yeah.
But I have an osprey story I'd
okay.
like to tell. It's real quick. I was out walking my field. I live right on the banks of the Hoosick River at the New York State-Vermont line.
Mm-hmm.
And I watched an osprey go into his winged happy dance and dive down into the river and pull out a rainbow trout and carry it up into the top of a dead elm tree and eat it. It was an unbelievable sight.
What a moment, huh?
Yes.
So the happy dance, it's really some sort of thing related to about to kill a fish?
Well, yeah. What it is,
they stand in midair and flap their wings for a couple of seconds before they dive down into the water.
Yeah, and that's a good description of what they do. Actually, what they do is they hover. They're flying along down the creek and they see a fish within reach. And what they do is they hover for a few minutes. They're flying stationary in the air,
with their wings flapping, but they're not going anywhere.
Right.
And then they just go.
They just what they're doing is taking aim, and then they dive. They're spectacular.
So cool.
Yeah, full splash dive. They get a 10 on the.
It was like, such an experience for me. It wasn't even funny. No, very few people get to view something like that.
And I
consider myself extremely lucky.
and that's the one of the benefits of being out there at the right time, the right place at the right time, and. That's why getting out of doors is beneficial that way, because it brings a chance of that kind of happenings right to your door, right in front of you.
Well, Jim, thanks a lot for the call. And, of course, if you get outside, you may see the old hummingbird praying mantis battle, which is very rare.
I doubt it.
No,
nope, I doubt it.
Yeah,
you might see a praying mantis and a hummingbird.
But they'll be getting along.
All two good things.
All right, Joan in Richmond, Massachusetts. Joan, you're on.
Hello. I'm a seasonal resident in Richmond on a lake. I leave mid-October. I've been feeding the birds. Some of the summer birds have left, but there are finches around. When should I stop feeding them?
Anytime you like.
They're okay.
They're okay.
They're okay.
Yeah, you can take off between anywhere, because birds, you know, they're using our generosity. They're taking advantage of it. And
yeah, I figure they know how to get along anyway. They've survived this long.
Exactly right. And you're in a good area there, that there's plenty of other resources available to them. So I wouldn't worry about it. Keep feeding them.
Okay, one other brief thing. One summer, I'm at a shallow part of the end of the lake, and one summer I was watching a heron swallow a fish that was too big for it.
Oh, boy.
And it was a real struggle for it to finally get it down.
And it finally did.
It finally did. It took quite a while and quite a bit of effort.
Oh, my gosh. His eyes were bigger than his gullet.
That's right. Joan, thank you for the call. Rich Guthrie is our guest, and Ryan in Pittsfield is next. Ryan, you're on.
Hey, probably about this time, like mid-afternoon on Sunday, I was sitting in my backyard, and there was what looked maybe the size of like a large hawk with like a really quick, you know, with really quick wings. And there was, it seemed like they were coming from like the northeast part of the yard to the southwest part of the yard. Some of them were maybe about 300 to 400 feet in the air. Others were just below the high cloud cover. And they definitely seemed like they had intention, like it was part of a migration. And they weren't in any grouping. They were kind of sporadic, somewhere within, you know, 50, 75 feet flying, you know, one behind the other. And it seemed like there'd be 30, 45 seconds before we'd see another. And then they were kind of, that was the grouping that they were in. And my girlfriend and I had no idea what they were. We figured it was some kind of migration, but I don't know if maybe you have an idea of what we saw.
Well, that's the sort of thing that the folks who go to places like the Chestnut Hill Hawk Watch in down in Westchester County, New York, are hoping to see. And it sounds to me like you're in the right place. You got it sounds like migrating hawks. And what these migrating hawks do is they keep an eye on one another. They look for favorable wind currents, and they'll ride it like a porpoise will ride the wake of a ship. They'll catch the wind currents and ride them along with using the least amount of energy necessary to get them as far south as fast as they can.
I guess that makes sense. Now, is there a certain kind? I know you had mentioned the broadwing hawk earlier. Is there a certain, you know, kind of hawk that we would have seen this past weekend, or are they specific to a certain time of the year or a certain period, like climate-wise? Or
yeah, you probably are broadwing hawks. I would put my poker chips down on the broadwing hawk, and but the others will, you know, they catch the same drift, and so you could watch a flight of hawks go by that will have four or five different kinds of hawks in them, but the majority right now this time of year will be the broadwing hawk.
Awesome. Thank you very much.
Yes, sir.
Ryan, thank you. And we go over to Bonnie in Sharon, Connecticut. Hello, Bonnie.
Hello.
You're on.
Ooh, okay. This is two-sided. One has to do with planting or making sure I have plants that feed birds during the winter. And what prompted it was an article in the Wall Street Journal this Sunday about planting some berries for treasure, well, bird treasure. And it listed the following things: eastern red cedar, winterberry holly, crabapple, a certain kind that doesn't get too big, and Asian beautyberry. Well, beautyberry. But those are the four that they listed off the top of their heads. Huh. Now, in the article, they said, you know, like the Audubon Society has searchable databases for native plants suitable for each region. My question is this: how do I know which of these plants gives the optimal amount of food for the birds, and is it possible that you could get together with the garden guys and either do a joint show or put out a brochure or a book or something so that us in the northeast of the country know where and what to plant and how much is too much, and is there such a thing when it comes to feeding birds?
I bet there is such a resource.
I do. There is. And I recommend it. What I will do, here's my homework I will take on for the when I come back next time. I will have a list.
If you come back next time. No, I'm kidding.
Go ahead. I'll be here. Don't worry. Right. Well, next scheduled program, We'll do a list like that. And the ones they listed on the Wall Street are highly recommended. I love that Winterberry one. Winterberry is a good one. Another one, let me see, you're in...
Eastern Red Cedar, crab apple, recommend Adirondack because it's got a small fruit.
Yes.
Or Prairie Fire.
And then also things like the American Mountain Ash. What we're looking at is fruit that will stay on a tree through the fall. In other words, not the grapes and
that's what this is about.
And native honeysuckle and the like will be gobbled up by the catbirds before they head south.
Right.
So what you want is something that will be here in January and February.
Yeah, that's what I'm hoping for
And those are
these alive in February.
A hard, pulpy fruit is what's best, and I would recommend that. So I'll come up with a list of native plant species that will benefit. And if I'm not here, I'll feed it to the gardening
guys?
Yes, indeed.
All right, because I don't think there's a room for you and the gardening guys in one studio.
Right.
Because I already had to take in my bird feeder over the summer thanks to our local population of bears.
Yeah, right. And I recommend. Good move on
you. Hey, Bonnie, thanks a lot for the call. And we go over to Joe in Middletown. Joe, you're on.
Hello. My mother has a finch feeder that attracts swarms of these pretty little yellow finches.
Mm-hmm.
It's that type it's like a sack full of seed. It's not the cylinder with holes in it. And it just does wonderful. So I got the exact same one. I put it up, and the birds snubbed me. I didn't get a single finch.
Oh, boy.
And I wonder if you have any ideas, is it like just where I happen to live 2 miles away that the finches just don't fly here, or what do you think I did wrong?
Well, the word isn't out there yet among those.
They're still at your mom's house.
Yeah, right, and they like her better. I take it personally.
Could it be
they snubbed me. I do take it personally. They snubbed me.
Yeah, right.
Could it be a different kind of seed?
No, it's the same exact thing.
Yeah, it sounds like thistle seed. It sounds like one of these thistle seed
feeders. It's those little black seeds.
Exactly. And just give it time. Well, the other possibility is thistle seed goes bad. It does sour. They catch on to that. So,
well, this was fresh.
Okay.
It was brand new. And I finally took it down because I had it up there like about 6 or 8 weeks. Not a thing.
Well, after that fifth week, it might have gone.
How do you know? Have you tasted them?
No, I don't know that you can tell off the top of your head, but the birds can.
Okay.
So I would continue with your program, and especially as winter comes on, as soon as one finds it, birds keep an eye on one another.
Yeah.
And if they see somebody else has onto something, they'll want to latch onto it.
Okay. Well, some people have suggested, well, I put mine up too late in the season. Is there
anything to
that?
No such thing.
I wouldn't think so. I mean, for crying out loud, birds are busy. They're all over the place.
They're right. And don't worry, they'll be wandering around looking. Right now, they're in the business of, they're just finishing their nest. Their goldfinches are very late nesters.
Yeah.
So they're just finishing up.
All right, Joe, good luck with that. We go over to Louise in Wurtsboro. Louise, you're on.
Hi, yes, thank you for taking my call. My question is about bird feeders. I would like to know if there are any bird feeders that where squirrels won't get into.
Yeah, there are.
My experience has been totally negative, and every bird feeder I have bought, they just get into it and they eat everything until I got to change the food every twice a day.
I know, and it's a battle between the bird and the squirrels. And what I would recommend is visit one of your local bird specialty shops, garden shops, Wild Birds Unlimited, or any of the other local bird feeder supply shops, and check them out. They can give you good advice. There are bird feeders out there, a little complicated to describe now, but you could get baffles, you could get specially designed poles to hang them on, and also these very fancy things with levers on them that will trip the squirrels off them.
You're kidding me.
Oh, yeah.
Sounds expensive.
Huh.
Well, it is.
Okay. You know, I wanted to share that there was like a very young squirrel that got onto my hummingbird feeder, and was trying to suck out the sugar water.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't think he was successful, but you know, I mean, that's what these squirrels are so aggressive. I don't know.
Well, that's the first I've heard of that, but that's a clever little squirrel. Chances are the rest of them may not get that idea, but keep trying.
Hey, Rich Guthrie, we're done. This historic broadcast is coming to a close.
History in the making.
Fantastic. Support comes from George Heigl Antiques, Boston Spa, New York, offering estate sale services, including management, appraisals, and evaluations for individuals, families, and businesses. 518-396-7974. Schenectady County Historical Society, presenting the Stockade Walkabout, celebrating 3 centuries of Schenectady history and architecture, touring historic homes, churches, and gardens in the Stockade this Saturday, 11 to 5, schenectadyhistorical.org. Chester Common Table, Main Street, Chester, Massachusetts, locally sourced comfort food, beers, wine, and cocktails. Live music every Friday, outdoor seating available, chestercommontable.com. And Daughters of Sarah, Albany, New York, providing assisted living, rehabilitation, skilled nursing, and respite care. Friends, family, community, 518-456-7831 for tours or information. Thanks to Rich Guthrie for being here. Thanks to you for the huge amount of great calls today and emails. Thanks to Jordan Taylor, our engineer. Carol Lapani answered the phones. Jim Lavoulis is our producer. I'm Ray Graff. Tomorrow, Gordon Fricke will be back in the driver's seat to answer your automotive questions. Right now, though, stand by for news.